Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Well,
that's another hole in the ground. That was one of my father's favorite sayings. Well, that's another hole in the ground.
He may still call in. He knows what's good for him.
I know I'm not worried about Eastern time or anything like that, because, you know, he was born and raised in Nazareth, so he's used to the time zone.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, other than living in Indianapolis now, I mean, that's a little different.
That's in the Eastern time zone.
Is it? I always thought Indianapolis was in the Central time zone.
No. It's in the East. All right. But sometimes they do multiple of these interviews. When they do, sometimes they get a little late getting to you.
I'm not worried.
You are panicked.
You're sure Indianapolis is in Indianapolis is not in the Central time zone.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Do you know how many games I've done in Indianapolis?
Well, where does that fall then in Indiana? Because it is in Indiana, isn't it? Or is it Illinois that it starts? It's one of those Illinois, I states.
Illinois is all in the Central time zone. Okay. And I believe the northwest corner of Indiana is in the Central time zone around Gary, I believe. Indianapolis is very much in the Eastern time zone. How many games have I done in Indianapolis?
I realize that, believe me. Okay. You're right. You're exactly right, by the way. You are. And the southern, southwestern tip of Indiana is in the Central time zone as well.
There you go.
We were going to visit, it was probably in the 90s, we were going up to the Penn State-Michigan State game at Michigan State the year Penn State went to the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends, as soon as we crossed the Michigan-Ohio border, all go to their watch and go, oh, we're going to set our time back for another hour. I said,
that's
what for?
Eastern time.
I said, what for? I said, well, the time change. We're in the Central time zone. I said, no, we're not. I looked it up because I figured you guys were going to try and get me on that, and it is still in the Eastern time zone. They looked at each other and went, oh, that didn't work.
Yeah, believe me, when you've done as many games as I have in as many time zones, you pretty much know where everything is, okay?
Yeah, my friend Ryan and John thought it would be funny to see if they could get me to set my watch back.
Can't imagine why they would do that to you.
No idea why that would happen.
So what's your panic level right about now?
I'm relaxed.
Oh, sure you are. You just lied through your eye teeth.
What's the scale?
0 to 10.
We're only about a 5 right now.
When does it reach 10? It's 4:09 already.
Okay, hold on. All right. He should be calling in shortly. I just got a message. He should be calling in shortly.
Well, if he doesn't
now,
call
I'm down
in
to
shortly.
A 3.
Okay. Because I mean, he didn't call, boy. We will find him.
I will see him on Sunday.
I thought Paul's comments about Danica Patrick not deserving her just due early in her career at Indy. I thought that was a very revealing comment. Because that, my friends, is TV in a nutshell. TV, okay, everything that you see is a show now. And you fall victim to this. Okay? You fall victim to this. What's so important to you when you do games?
The story. Setting up the story.
Yeah. Okay, guess what's really important?
Not the story?
The game. Okay, the game's important. I mean, setting it up during the week, I mean, that's for talk shows like what we do right now. But when we get to the game, you know darn well when they kick it off, tip it off, first pitch is thrown. Now it starts to unfold. And they're all different. That's why you trying to set up a storyline, you setting up a storyline, for example, with all due respect, okay? You setting up a storyline is counter to what it really is. What it really is every game takes on its own personality. Every race takes on its own personality. No two are alike. And you can't take the square peg of the story and try to jam it into a round hole, which is the game or the race. And that's what TV tries to do. They sit down, they try to tell a story.
But we're training a generation of broadcasters to do it that way because that's the way we grew up watching it.
It's not what I do. I teach it.
I understand that. I understand that. You are in the minority.
I may be in the minority, but I also strongly, strongly believe I'm right.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not debating this with you one bit. I'm just saying that one thing that television is doing is trying to cater to broad appeal, as in not just the motorsports fan, the football fan, the insert sport here fan. They want to be a little more broad, so they want to try and get some storytelling in to reach a bigger audience, not just the specialty audience.
I understand that. Like he said, Tony Kanaan is a triathlete. Okay, that's right. Fine. I understand that. I mean, I told a story last night about Anthony Zettel playing golf, you know, and we're out there one day, and I was in the group behind him, and he said, "Hey, Steve, why don't you come up and I'll just play the last couple holes with us?" I said, "Sure, okay, fine." And I never saw anybody hit a golf ball that far in my life. The ninth hole in the white course is flat for the first 150, then it drops down toward the green. It drops down dramatically. And I remember I hit my drive in that hole. I'm playing that hole. I'm 110 yards away, which I'm feeling pretty good. It's fine. Okay, I'm just going to take out a lob wedge and we'll get home. He hits the ball 10 yards from the green, 340 yards. Now, his second shot also went 340 yards. But I mean, it's okay to... But you don't have time to insert stories. You don't have time to do that as much as you may think. Once the game gets going, it's the game. To me, the stories are told on the pregame. The stories are told on the... And Paul Page has it a little bit different because he actually has time to do this. There may be a lot of passing at IndyCar, but there's also some dead time, too. Yeah.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, by the way. That's the time, like when you watched the Indianapolis 500, the first hour of the entire broadcast was story after story after story after story. And then when you got around 11 o'clock or noon, that's when they started getting into the race. That's when it was all race oriented.
To a point. But they try to predetermine what they think, and he's right. They try to predetermine really the outcome, and they try to force it down your throat until the point that they are shocked by it. And that's the bothersome part about TV. Bothersome part about TV is that sometimes they work so hard at, you know, at the art that they forget about the excitement of the game. Especially if it's a really good game, they forget about that stuff. And to me, that's not the ball game. And you're saying, I know you're saying that, well, we were brought up on the Olympics and how they set it up and all the incredible struggle of this young girl from Lithuania and how she had to walk 18 miles to school in the snow and walk back and then make her own dinner because her mother was ill and the whole thing. And like, oh, my goodness, I hope she wins a medal.
And had to borrow the ice skates.
I hope she wins the medal. Okay.
But the advantage of the post-Olympics broadcast now, the as you like to call, as we like to call it, the recorded Olympics, you have the chance to tell that story and then immediately afterwards show them winning the medal. That's what you don't always get that normally if it's live.
And then take a break and have them on live. We'll come back with Sage Karam in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And very pleased to be joined from Ganassi Racing, Sage Karam. Sage, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
Well, for you, what kind of journey has this year been? And a journey that certainly has its ups and downs. What have you learned from it?
You know, it's definitely a rookie season, that's for sure. You know, it's been tough. It's a learning year for me. You know, we've had a lot of downs starting off the season, and you know, but they're all learning experiences. And you know, we try not to make the same mistake twice. That's the biggest thing, and just keep learning and improving. And that's, I think, what we've been doing. And you know, got some good results towards the end of the season. And you know, it's been good. You know, we're starting to work with the team pretty well, and working with my teammates well. So. You know, just excited to get my home race in.
Right, yeah, your home race is coming up. You also have made a podium. You talked about getting better as the season's gone along. What did it mean to your team to make that step as you make more steps along the way?
Yeah, I mean, the podium was it was good for us. You know, it was a good race. It showed that, you know, we could run up front. We just, you know, a lot of races this year I've just made mistakes on my part. And, you know, that was a race that we really eliminated all the mistakes. And, you know, I wish I could do that for every race, but, you know, sometimes being a rookie, you know, just get a little too overexcited and, you know, you just lose track of some things. But, no, it was a good race and good confidence boost for the team. And, you know, I think now we go in every weekend and, you know, we think we can be a contender.
You were a wrestler at one point in your younger days. Younger, of course, you're only 20, but in your younger days you wrestled. What did you take from that sport in terms of the intangibles of it that also fuel you as a race car driver?
Yeah, I think what wrestling really taught me was, you know, you never really give up, and it's a team sport, and, you know, it's not all about you, and also, you know, in order to win dual meet in wrestling, you know, it takes everybody on the team, got to wrestle their best, so in order to win a race, you know, it doesn't just take me, it takes a pit crew, it takes the engineer, you know, it takes race strategists, it takes a lot of people, so, you know, wrestling just kind of taught me all those life lessons things, and especially just not giving up, and when the going gets tough.
It's one thing to dream about being in this spot. It's another thing to then do something about it. What opened the door for you to take you down the road to actually do something about it?
You know, I mean, obviously growing up, I always wanted to be a race car driver, I think. And, you know, it's always kind of like a fantasy when you're a young kid. You know, you think about it a lot. And, you know, we started winning some championships and go-karts and stuff, and got into cars at a pretty early age. And I think once I was into cars, you know, I think that's when I really thought, hey, you know, if we can bring in some good results, maybe win a few championships here, we can make it to the top. And, you know, especially when I was in Indy Lights. And, you know, that was the big thing for me, was just trying to win that championship. It was going to be tough coming in as a rookie. And, but, you know, we managed to pull that off. And I think that's the year I really got serious and kind of you know, really started working hard to get to the top.
How important were your parents in all of this, and what has their support meant? Because not everybody is going to say, oh, yeah, go ahead and do it. Some are going to say, look, take a safer route in life.
Yeah, no, well, my parents, you know, have always been supportive. You know, even though my mom gets a little freaked out every weekend I'm on track, you know, she's never been like, you know, you can't do this because it's too dangerous or anything. She's always been forward. And, you know, my dad, he's been to every race basically my whole life and took me up to New York to go race go-karts every weekend. So, you know, a lot of miles he spent, you know, driving and a lot of time working on the go-karts and everything and a lot of money that, you know, family didn't have. So, you know, they've made a lot of sacrifices for me, and, you know, I can't really thank them enough. And that's, you know, that's the main thing you want to do once I become a little bit more established and stuff, is to try to help my parents back.
Sage, what did the Indy Lights series do to prepare you for this step? And did it prepare you enough based on what you see now?
You know, I mean, it's just more seat time, learning tracks a little bit more horse-powered car. That was the big thing that Indy Lights, you know, kind of taught. But as far as, you know, preparing me, you know, it's hard to really get prepared for an Indy car. It's a whole other animal, and the races are so much longer. Everything's a lot different, and there were a lot more things I needed to learn before, you know, that I needed for Indy car. But I think the only way to figure all that stuff out is to actually just drive the Indy car and, you know, do more races and everything. And, you know, it was difficult to come from Indy Lights to Indy car. It's definitely a lot harder transition than I thought it was going to be.
What's been the toughest part of the transition? And then conversely, what has been the easiest part of the transition?
I think the toughest part for me was the races are just so much longer. I think a lot of the times I forget that they're that long. You know, maybe in the beginning of the race, you know, I'd take a few risks that I don't need to take. You know, but I think, you know, I'm starting to figure that out now and drive, you know, like 85% now throughout the whole race. And then the last, you know, 50 laps or so, that's when you can crank it up. But, you know, Indy Lights, you're always going 100% because you only got 30, 40 laps to get it done. So, you know, that's when we sprint race at the end in IndyCar. So, you know, it's definitely, that's the hardest thing. Fuel conservation, another big thing I had to learn this year. I'd say the easiest thing would be, what would be the easiest? I mean, it's tough. I mean, everything about IndyCar racing is tough, but I'm not sure about what the easiest would be. I mean, I guess just, you know, just learning the racecraft again. You know, I took a year off, but, you know, coming back, you know, coming in Indy Lights, we raced each other hard, and I think, you know, we even in IndyCar, you know, we raced each other pretty similar. We raced each other hard and clean, and, you know, that was the easiest thing to pick back up on was just, there's not much of a difference, you know. Maybe you see a lot less, maybe bold moves in IndyCar because, you know, they're more experienced, you know what to do in different situations and stuff. But for the most part, it's pretty similar.
I was talking to Jeff Gordon a couple of months ago, and he, you know, he's going around for the last time, and he drove a Penn State car. That's why I talked to him. He was driving a Penn State marked car in the Pocono race back in June, and I said every track has its own personality. What's the personality of Pocono? And he gave me a very detailed answer. So for you, every track has its own personality. What is Pocono's personality?
I'd say it's one of those tracks that when you look at it on the schedule, you know it's going to be a challenge. You know, it's got three turns on it that are all completely different from each other. So you got turn one with a lot of banking compared to the others, and it's pretty tight. So you're going down in there, and you don't think the car's going to stick, and somehow, you know, thing sticks. And, you know, that was in Indy Lights. It was at like 200 miles an hour. You didn't think it was going to stick, and now, you know, we're going to have an extra 20, 30 mile an hour on that. So I can't imagine what that's going to be like. But, you know, turn two is a kink, you know, but you can't take it lightly. And turn three is kind of like turn one, but, you know, a lot less banking. And, you know, it's going to be a guy who can set the car up between one and three, you know, pretty good and have a good car in traffic that's going to be able to make passes. I think passing is going to be pretty tough, but, you know, we'll see. You know, I don't think we're going to know until we really start turning laps.
For you, what has it meant in your development as a driver that you hooked in with Ganassi Racing?
Yeah, well, I'm at this age, you know, it's a pretty amazing feeling. You know, we have incredible resources, have incredible teammates, and, you know, to be the youngest driver at the team ever, you know, in IndyCar is a pretty cool statement, and, you know, shows that Chip has put a lot of faith in me and everything. So, you know, I'm having a lot of fun, and also it's a very serious environment, so, you know, I'm learning a lot, but, no, it's been great, and I love the organization, and, you know, that this is where I want to stay, and, you know, for years to come, and, you know, hopefully make it more of a lifetime thing.
That's the next part. You're young, 20. You're also an American. Do you sense a responsibility within the sport in this country because of both of those elements, and has it been difficult or easy to handle?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, coming up, you know, being the young guy, you know, it's you got a lot riding on you. People are looking at you more and stuff, but, you know, it's also being American is cool. You know, I think we're starting to see Americans do better in the sport. And, you know, I think that's the big thing is that we need Americans to do well in the sport. And, you know, now you're seeing some Americans winning races and fighting for championships and stuff. So that's definitely good. And I think we have a good growth of Americans coming through the ladder system right now that you know, have potential to make it to the top. So, you know, I think I'm just the start of what's to come. And, you know, I think if I can prove it that, you know, that I came up through the Mazda Road India as a young American and can do well, then I think it can show that the other people that have come through with me or the people that are coming through now deserve a chance and can do it as well.
Sage, the TV ratings have been growing and growing as the season's gone along. That's impressive. What kind of buzz do you sense at the track when you get there?
Yeah, no, I think this has been a pretty good year for IndyCar. You know, I think the numbers have gone up a little bit, and, you know, every weekend, it seems like every weekend we're getting something talked about, you know, 72 hours, you know, after the race even happens, and that never really seemed to happen last year, and now this year we're starting to do that. So that's always good when you get people talking about the sport after the race. And, you know, I don't know. I heard there's going to be pretty nice attendance at Pocono. Not sure, you know, the exact numbers or anything, but, you know, it's a good race to have. You know, we got two drivers from Nashville, Pennsylvania are going to be in it. So, I mean, that's pretty rare in itself, getting two people from the same town, let alone, you know, people, it's hard to find two people from the same state in IndyCar nowadays. So we got two from the same town. I think it's going to be big for the schedule. Pocono's big, and, you know, it's really looking good. It's really rising, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
Next up, you mentioned your home track. Well, that's Pocono. Would have been Nazareth before they decided to sell it off, but now it's Pocono. So, you know, every weekend has great meaning to you regardless, but is there something extra and special because it is here?
Yeah, it's definitely more special, this track. You know, it's besides Indianapolis, I'd say this is the one I'd want to win the most. It's fun, you know, my hometown, my home friends, family, and you know, it's probably the track that, you know, I'm going to have more of a fan base at compared to the other ones. So, you know, I want to do well for myself. I want to do well for the team, but I also want to do well for everyone that's come out and watching and supporting.
Every athlete, every coach I know reacts differently before games. What are you like before a race? Are there nerves? Is there something in the stomach? Are you calm? How are you pre-race?
I think it depends. You know, I think it's where I'm starting. It, you know, depends if I'm going to be nervous for a race. If I'm starting more up front, you know, I'm a little bit more nervous, whereas if I'm starting in the back, you know, I'm not really nervous at all. But no, I like to stay generally calm before a race. You know, I don't, you know, usually, especially Pocono, like I won't be hanging out with, you know, a lot of friends and family before the race on race day. I'll just be kind of doing my own thing and just kind of, you know, zoning out a little bit and focusing in on the race. And, you know, that's going to be the big thing for me. I like to get, like, a little bit of a long time before the race. So, you know, we'll see.
What do you listen to on the iPod before you go out?
Anything Big Machine Records. It's going to be... it's going to... We have some cool events coming up. We got the Sound Garage event, the Chip Ganassi Racing coming up with 1,000 horses at... That band is going to be pretty cool this year, so I'm looking really forward to that. And you know, they're an amazing group, and we got Rascal Flatts on the car for Pocono, so that's going to be really cool. you know, so it's really cool working with Big Machine. We get to meet some really cool artists and groups, and I've been enjoying it.
That's terrific. Sage, thanks a lot for the time. Best of luck on Sunday. It's great to have you back home and racing again, and we sense you're going to have a great career. Thanks for just giving us a few minutes of your time.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
Sage Karam, Pennsylvania's own. He'll be racing at Pocono on Sunday. Bottom of the hour, time for news. The Kevin Herr Fun Hour is now over.
This might be your best show ever, Steve.
No, but thanks. I appreciate that.
I said it might be.
Final half hour coming up. Kevin will analyze the interviews, and actually this time he will analyze the interviews because this is actually the first time in 4 years he listened to any of them.
This might be the first full show I've actually listened beginning to end.
Oh, boy. I'm going to go impale myself on a sword. I'll be back.
Zero, 66.
The winning play is at Sunbury Motors Kia. 0% financing for 66 months. Sunbury Motors Kia has the winning play with 0% APR financing for 66 months. Why pay interest when you can drive away in any new Kia with 0% financing? Choose from 2015 Kia Fortes, Optimas, Souls, Cadenzas, Sedonas, Sportages, and 2016 Serenos. Sunbury Motors Kia has every color and every option available. Plus, every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. Ask yourself, why pay interest on a new vehicle? Come to Sunbury Motors Kia now and pay 0% APR for 66 months. Owning a brand new Kia is more affordable than ever at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
0-66.
Financing to well-qualified customers through KMF. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. We're in a bold move. Tom has given Kevin a car to drive.
And this week, it's the 2015 Ford Edge Limited. I'm sorry. Is it the Titanium? Sorry. I forgot what it was. See, the reason I forgot is I had to turn it in a little early because it's already purchased and off the lot.
Only the driver's limited.
The Titanium actually replaced the limited with standard 19-inch wheels. And as I said, the Titanium is actually already sold. One of the options you can have available on the 2015 Edge is the Adaptive Cruise Collision Warning System and Brake Support. Also has the EcoBoost engine, daytime running lamps. And one of the standard features on the Titanium is the LED tail lamps with the light bar. And by the way, front and rear camera available on the 2015 Edge. Very comfortable vehicle to put five in, plus plenty of room in the back to haul luggage, haul whatever you need to. Seats fold right down as well, so you can load it right up to the front seats. That's the 2015 Ford Edge right now with 0% interest for 72 months with Ford credit financing, and get a grand as well. So not only do you get some money, but you save a ton of money with 0% over 72 months with the 2015 Ford Edge from Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury. That's where you'll find Ford, Hyundai, and Lincoln, Kia on Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Very nice. Well, okay, you've had your hour, so go ahead.
Go ahead what?
Analyze the hour.
Oh, I think it was great to hear from Paul Page and get a little insight into how he sees IndyCar racing, not just what he calls, but also how he prepares for it. love Sage Karam's at times candor about how young he is and some of the mistakes he's made. He's willing to own up to those mistakes, especially early in the season. But also, you could tell he was very excited to have this race at Pocono, because other than Indianapolis, this is probably the one race where he has so many people coming to see him, because it is literally his home track. And of course, Marco Andretti's home track as well, with Andretti Racing. They actually, I think they lived like almost across the street from each other at one point in Nazareth, which is really unique when you talk about IndyCar racing, to not only have two guys from the same town, but have it be such close proximity from each other.
Yeah, like the Unsers. Oh, that's right. They grew up in the same house.
Okay. That doesn't count because they're related.
That was a good one.
Doesn't count.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Hopefully you learned more about the race. Okay.
Next, I'm going to try and get Simona Di Silvestro on the program to talk about Formula E for you.
I want Pippa Middleton.
It's not Pippa Middleton.
I want Pippa Middleton on the show.
I'm sorry. I don't know how we have to work that one. I'm not sure if we have to go through London or what for that particular interview.
All right. I mean, she's racing this weekend, right?
I don't know if Pippa Man's entered or not. She usually is entered in the ovals.
Where's Pippa Middleton?
London.
Okay. All right. Looks like Chase Utley's going to stay with the Phillies the rest of the year. Ruben Amaro said that today on 94 WIP Philly.
Are you surprised by that?
No, because he's hurt, and that's the reason why.
I thought the same exact things you did.
I think if he's healthy and he's playing and he's doing some positive things, then all of a sudden you've got people that are more willing to maybe give up a prospect or two to get him. I think being hurt, excuse the expression, but you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're trading for damaged goods, so you know, it reduces the value. There's just, you know, too many things working against them to make it happen. Too many things. So, no, I'm not surprised because of the injury. It's the same. Look, Ryan Howard would have been a perfect trade candidate 2 years ago, and then he hurt his knee. Stuff like that happens. You can't deal guys when they're hurt. People are trying to win now, and they can't roll the dice on somebody that they hope will be back and playing for them.
No, I completely agree with you. 100%. If he was 100%, I think he would be going to the Dodgers and probably already would be there. But because of that, he's too much of a risk at his age even to take a gamble on him.
And now I think you have to make a big decision with the Phillies to bring him back. I mean, he was due $15 million next year under that contract, but he needed 500 plate appearances to get there. And, of course, he won't even get remotely close to that. Now, tomorrow's another big day, another day where in the talk show world the gifts just keep on rolling in. Tomorrow is another Brady Goodell saga in court.
Can't wait.
This might be one of the 10 more absurd stories in my lifetime. Absurd. So,
by the way, Chase Utley, the other day, four hits against the Brewers, a double and three singles, knocked in the Phillies' only run in the ninth, averaging .213.
Heard an intrigue. Most celebrity interviews don't intrigue me. Could care less. And you're seeing more and more celebrity interviews on sports talk radio now. You know, because look, I mean, celebrities are trying to promote their projects across as many spectrums as possible. So it's not just great to get on the Today Show. It's also great to get on sports talk shows and so forth because you're reaching a different audience. Usually, I'd say 9 times out of 10, I could care less. There really isn't anything I hear a celebrity say that I find to be tremendously in-depth that I haven't heard from other people that actually bring some depth to the table. I mean, just because you can recite lines doesn't mean you're one of the you're Rodin, okay? But today I heard an interview with Robert Redford. And Redford does a lot of very thoughtful movies with some depth over the course of his career. And makes movies. And he's, I think he has another one coming out. Redford turned 79 today. Redford loves sports. Loves sports. He got to know at one point Ted Williams. Redford is actually a huge Red Sox fan. And he's made two movies that, as far as he's concerned, are sports type of movies. One is obvious, that's The Natural. And the other one is actually, while not sports, sports related in terms of competition, and that's The Candidate. And he talked about what drew him to sports is that when he was young, he was told, and his generation was told, that, you know, it's not winning that counts, it's how you play the game that counts. And he said he found out right away when he started playing that winning the game counts. And winning the game means a lot. So they always told us, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. And he found out when he started playing, no, it is whether you win or lose. And that's the competitor that comes out in you. He said, what was interesting about making The Natural and about making The Candidate was that in The Natural, Roy Hobbs hits the home run, crosses home plate, and you see him playing catch with his son. At that point, we have to assume what happens in his life. In The Candidate, he is a young man running for the U.S. Senate seat against an established Republican U.S. senator who has multiple terms and is considered to be unbeaten. But here comes this young, brash, good-looking candidate that they do a great job with of scripting, being careful where he goes, what he says, how he debates, how he says it, and then quickly moves up the polls and wins. The ending is incredible. Because now he has spent this entire time pushing himself to win, pushing himself to win, pushing himself to win, pushing to win, and he wins. And now the party happens, the celebration, they're at a hotel. And he says to his campaign manager, look, I need a moment, and he pulls him into one of the rooms. And Peter Boyle plays the campaign manager, and he says, look, he says, Senator, he said, we got 30 seconds before they find out we're in here. Once they do, they're going to overrun the place. What do you want? And Redford, the young candidate who just won, says, what do we do now? Which I always thought was one of the great lines because I just spent this whole time running and running and running and running, and I won. Now what do we do? It is interesting in coaching youth sports over the years. I did that for 14 years. They tell you to tell kids, you know, and this goes to T-ball. look, can't keep score, no score, okay. We're just playing to play. And like I care about winning or losing. I mean, when I was coaching a game, I'd be thinking of moves to help the kids win. I could care less about, from my point of view, if they won or lost. I cared about them wanting to win. Because winning's fun. Winning's enjoyable. But there is a competition. I'd be standing there in front of the bench. Right? I remember Jim Caldwell, who's now the coach of the Detroit Lions. And his son was on the team. And, you know, Jim was at the games and the whole thing. You know, and those kids would be sitting behind me. And I could hear them say, Mr. Jones, if we get four more runs, we're going to win the game. All right here, Mr. Jones, we're winning 24-22. And you always had to give the obligatory, well, we're not supposed to keep score. But I laughed every time. They knew what the score was. But they always know. The worst thing about youth sports are adults. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
My farmer. My father wanted me to be a farmer.
My father wanted me to be a baseball player. Well, you're the best damn hitter I've ever seen.
One of the things I always love about it. Last night he knocked the cover off the ball. Literally knocked the cover off the ball.
No, my favorite.
Bye, 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 Mr. Spalding.
No, you know what my favorite part of that movie is?
What?
The part where they bring in the psychic, whatever.
Oh, says, of course. Losing is a disease.
Is a disease, right? I'm not going to sit there and be put to sleep by some two-bits Svengali, because that's exactly what I would have done. I would have gotten up and walked out. I was, I'm not going to be put to sleep by some two-bits Svengali. Get out of here. Just walk up and hit.
but curable.
No, I understand. Okay, I got it. You know, everybody's different. I remember one time, one of the sports psychologists, this is when Susan Robinson was playing basketball here. And Susan Robinson scored 2,000-something points here. I was walking down the hallway at Rec Hall, and he's in the hallway with her. He's like, you know, see the ball, and it rolls off your fingers toward the basket. Visualize the front of the basket. And I said, look, Susan, just take the ball and shoot it. For God's sakes, you're a 2,000-point scorer. I said, if I had your talent, I'd just take the ball and shoot.
You know, every time I hear something like that, all I can think of is Caddyshack. Be the ball, Danny. Be the ball. Where to go? Right in the lumberyard, Danny.
Look, I understand there are different ways of doing things. I just think all that stuff is mumbo jumbo. You either can do it or you can't.
You have to have yourself mentally prepared to hit.
Yeah, but it's like you're going to mentally prepare yourself for it. Do you think I sit there and mentally prepare myself to go on and do a football game? I walk in, we kid around, they kick it off, we start. I worked all week to get ready. I'm ready. Nervous? No nerves. I don't get that stuff. See the ball, be the ball. What ball, be the ball? Put it on the tee and hit it.
Where'd it go? Right in the lumberyard, Danny.
Now it's considered to be good luck. Where, in Haiti?
Can't tell you how many times I've used that line, and when Daniel finally watched the movie, he goes, so that's where it came from. Right in the lumberyard, Danny.
You could overthink anything. Oh, wait a minute. I'm talking to the poster child of that.
I like to call it analyzing.
You overthink everything. What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
I don't understand. I've never been accused of thinking before. What are you talking about?
I'd like to thank Paul Page and Sage Karen for being on the show today.